Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
You know, Joe, I just cursed you immensely in our last Friarside chat because you stole a book on me. And then I called dibs on another book that I was very excited about. And I can't complain anymore because I did this to myself. I'm very excited to talk about this book. And I know our guest has no idea about our rules yet. I will explain in a moment. But Joe, tell the people who's joining us today first.
Well, I'm very excited because I've wanted to talk to this person since I read this book. And now we have the opportunity to talk to Tony Fleece. I, of course, talked about Stray Dogs on the show a while back. And he's got another upcoming book called Feral that we are very excited about. Tony, welcome to the show.
Joe Fryer, happy to be here.
So I, the reason why I was cursing Joe is what we do, Tony, when we don't have guests on is we talk about books that the other guy hasn't read. So occasionally we have to call dibs on a title that to secure, okay, this guy's not reading it. I'll go and read it and then talk about it, you know, when at least the first arc's done. I've done that. There's been about, I don't know, 7 or 8 times in the last year, like since the start of 2023, where I've gotten screwed over. Because once we interview somebody, obviously, we got to read the material. And you obviously gave us a few extra copies of Feral, which we appreciate. But yeah, that's why I've been cursing Joe. So that we're excited to have you on. Obviously, I'm the one that asked you to come on. But
wait, so Joe got to read the book, but you did not get to read it?
I was reading Feral. And yeah. Joe wasn't going to get to read it because I called dibs. So right. I didn't screw Joe over. I screwed myself over. That's all. But then I'd rather talk to you anyways because Feral, what an awesome first issue. And Joe and I got to read the second and third as well. Had a blast. The creative team, of course, Trish Fortner, Tone Rodriguez, and Brad Simpson. And Brad was also doing colors for you on Stray Dogs, correct?
He colors most of my stuff, really. Okay. Yeah, he colored Stray Dogs. He colors Army of Darkness. He colored this, colors Local Man. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. And of course, Trish and Tomer with you on Stray Dogs as well. Of course, like Trish's style with the animals just in your writing is an amazing combination. We'll get to that more in a second, but a quick synopsis for those who don't know about Feral yet, which is out on the 27th. So if you're listening to this, make sure you head to your local comic shop. It won't be out the day that this drops, but it'll be coming up the week after. So make sure you go there, get it. You're going to really enjoy it. The synopsis for Feral issue 1, meet Elsie, Lord Fluffy Britches, and Patch, three indoor cats lost in the not-so-great outdoors during a nightmarish rabies outbreak. Without their humans to protect them, the cats rush to find their way home before they're eaten by the forest full of rabid beasts on their tails. Don't get bit. Don't get scratched. And don't be an animal that Tony wants to write about, apparently. My goodness.
Yes. Holy smokes. So I absolutely loved, you know, this first issue, and I loved Stray Dogs when it first came out. And I want to talk about Stray Dogs real quick because I think it's important, because when that book first dropped, I wasn't going to read it initially. You know, I saw it on the shelf and I, you know, I see this adorable dog on the cover, and I kind of flipped through the art a little bit and I mistook it for a kid's book. And yeah, we know if you've read Stray Dogs,
nope,
that is not the case. But the wonderful thing about your local comic book shop is talking to people, right? And so I remember the next week, I was grabbing a book. I was talking to someone about a book, and they said, "Have you read Stray Dogs?" And I said, "No." And they just put it right in my hands. They said, "Read it, buy it, read it. You're going to love it." And what I want to know is that you've written the story about these cute animals, and they're adorably drawn by Trish, right? You've got this cute little world, but your stories are anything but. Did you find, like, what, when you first came up with this concept, why animals first off? And then did you have any sort of reservations about, you know, the target audience for these books being someone like myself who might initially pass on them at first?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, so when I had the idea for Stray Dogs, I had the idea for a serial killer who takes someone's pets as trophies. Like, that was the germ of the idea, was that somebody that takes dogs as trophies. I was watching a serial killer show, and the killer in one scene didn't have a dog, and then the next scene he had a dog, and I was fascinated. I was like, where'd he get that dog from? Like, I just wanted to know how he ended up with this dog. And so that was the germ of it. But then it wasn't something that I like knew I had to make until the idea of very quickly I had the idea like, well, it should be told from the point of view of the dogs. Like that was pretty early. Like that was right away after I had the idea. Like I sort of thought about like, how would you tell that story? And then as soon as I thought of that, I thought of Oliver and Company. I don't know why necessarily, but I just sort of saw that. And I said, if that was about a serial killer, that's what I would want to do. And I'm sure part of me thought like, that's going to be a tough sell. We got planes flying overhead. I hope it's not bothering.
No, you're good.
Part of me definitely thought it was going to be a tough sell. And like Trish, nor I, nor anybody beyond thinking that we had a cool idea for a story. Like we didn't think we had a hit comic on our hands. We just thought like, hopefully somebody will let us make this and put it out, you know? I'm sure I thought like this could be a hindrance for people picking it up and reading it. But that's also why we did like the horror movie covers and sort of like try to do enough. And every cover that we did, awesome. You know, but aside from having a cute dog on it, we tried to make it look foreboding and scary and like a horror story. And the logo looks like a horror logo. So we tried to sort of hedge in every way besides what the dogs look like. And I think I just made the dogs like Trish and I, you know, I went to Trish to draw it because I want them to look like that, like Oliver and Company, like a Don Bluth movie. And part of that is because I draw cartoony myself and I have like a chip on my shoulder about like people telling me what I can and can't tell stories about, you know? So I'm just like, I bet I could do this, you know? And so
I like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because like I said, right? Like it's you know, don't judge a book by its cover. And that's exactly what I fucking did.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad that someone like said, no, like you put the book in my hands. And well, once you read it, it's like
poof. And what you get from them being cartoony that I feel you don't necessarily get if they're drawn realistically, is that it's much easier for the reader to invest emotion into them, you know, like even if you're somebody who has dogs and you invest when your dog comes up to you, you think like, oh, he loves me, or he's, you know, he's trying to say hi to me. You're sort of like implanting all these human emotions into your dogs. For some reason, when you see a dog in a comic drawn super realistically, you don't necessarily go like, oh, I wonder what he's thinking about, or he's happy or whatever. It just looks like a dog. Yeah. And so I knew that we could put a lot more emotion, a lot more fear, and a lot, you know, all the things that we would need to do in the story in cartoony dogs. And just by using dogs in general, you sort of get people being more invested than if they were people. And by having cartoony dogs, you can sort of do more emotions, do more acting with them.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's when I was reading Feral and getting that early look at it, the first issue, I was like, it's the same thing with Stray Dogs, but I was specifically talking about Feral at the time. It's like, you feel like you're watching, if you grew up on Disney movies, or even in like the Forbes quote that you guys have on the trade cover, what do you get when you cross Silence of the Lambs with All Dogs Go to Heaven? You get Stray Dogs, like All Dogs Go to Heaven, one of my favorite childhood movies, and I very much get those vibes. But then I see all this terrible shit going on, and I'm like, God, now what? Why am I thinking about this happening to all these other characters that I cared about previously? Just fucking with my memories. And it's brilliant. Like it's such an awesome idea. When you saw the success of Stray Dogs, is that what led to like, okay, like this is doing well, can we do this elsewhere? And is that like the start of Feral, or was it somewhere else?
Part of it. I mean, yeah, like I said, we didn't expect Stray Dogs to, we thought we would, when we got the numbers for Stray Dogs, we were like, all right, well, this will go until issue 3. And then we'll have enough money from the first issue sales to do 4 and 5. And then we'll put a trade out and that'll be good. You know, we did not expect to make a ton of money or anything on it. So when it started to sell really well and we realized like, oh, this is something, other people like this thing that we made, you know, this thing that we like, then we were like, well, would love to do more of this, but we didn't want to extend that story because you read it, you know, like it has an ending and it wouldn't make a ton of sense for there to just be like a Stray Dogs 2. You know, the same way it doesn't make a ton of sense that there's like a Halloween 2, you know,
like, or now Halloween 10. I think they're starting it all H2O. Over again.
Yeah. But like the stakes on these sort of things are so low that like there's no like media machine where they're like, you got to do a sequel, you know. But we did love working together and we loved the sort of like subgenre that we sort of created, you know, we wanted to do more in that vein. And so we started thinking, we knew, like when we pitched Stray Dogs, we knew we wanted to do like a special or a mini series thing if it did well. And that was Dog Days. And then after, like while we were working on Dog Days, we were like, what could we do? And so we really started kicking around ideas about like what would be another thing we could do that would be, you know, in the same vein, but be completely different. And so that's sort of how we ended up at Stray Dogs was just, you know, Stray Dogs is in a house. Let's do something that takes place in like in a big wide open space or like a where we could go anywhere. And Stray Dogs is about one bad guy. What if there's like a million bad guys? And so just about figuring out what we could do that's different, and not just A, that it would surprise people that have already read Stray Dogs, but B, you know, like nobody wants to repeat themselves. Like we don't want to just do another serial killer book or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oliver and Company meets 28 Days Later. That's how I would sort of describe.
That sounds like the My Little. That sounds like the My Little Ponies. I see what you're saying. Okay, yes. Sorry. Yes. Joe has a My Little Ponies one that he wants.
I do. But so again, you know, 28 Days Later. You know, with Stray Dogs, right? You mentioned it just a few moments ago. You had all these awesome like homage covers to like horror movies and things like that. We've never really asked, you know, writers or artists that were on the show about variant covers. Like how does the concept of variant covers come up? Who decides how many they're going to be, you know, with Stray Dogs? I grabbed a whole bunch of them. I absolutely love them. Do you have the same plans with Feral that, you know, sort of do these awesome sort of homage covers to whether it's horror movies or whatever it might be?
Yeah. Yeah. We try to do just horror movies on the ones that we do. But so like the way that the variant covers come around with Image Comics, you really can just decide, you know, like Saga does one cover and that's it. And then books like, you know, when we did Stray Dogs, we did two covers and that was it. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, we need a cover for reprints and we need a cover for these retailers want to do a cover. And so it starts to balloon like that. But you can also just say no to retailer covers. Like Saga literally just does one cover. And so like, if we were selling those numbers and we were just like, let's just chill and not worry about all that stuff, I feel like there's something to that. But we wanted to do two when we did Stray Dogs and we wanted to carry it over into Feral because like I said, you want the one cover that's the A cover of the book. This is what the book is about. But then we did those horror covers to be like, this is a cartoon that's a horror thing, you know, like you see a cartoony horror poster here. It should tell you without having to tell you that like, this is a horror book. This is not for kids.
Yeah. Some of those were just absolutely brilliant. And that was the one thing I looked forward to. It was going into the comic shop each month was please have, you know, the horror variant cover so I can grab it. But yeah, just fun stuff there.
Yeah, the Silence of the Lambs one was probably my favorite one. You know, Joe, honestly, you just like I've read the first three issues and it didn't hit me like, oh, this is like kind of like, you know, we're dealing with rabies and stuff like that. This is kind of like an animal version of a zombie story. I'm a dumbass and didn't pick up on that. I just been enjoying it the whole time.
I wasn't going to say it, but
yeah, no, I appreciate it. You're on your best behavior today. Jeez, you must really like Tony. But I'm curious too. One thing I did catch right away, I mean, when we first see the synopsis is the name Lord Fluffy Britches. Yeah. I need to know who's responsible for naming that character. Is it you?
Yeah. I mean, I just like the idea of these cats, you know, because they don't call him Lord Fluffy Britches. They just call him Lord.
Right.
But I like the idea that, you know, if that was your name and then your friends would call you, you know, like Lord, or, you know, if your name was, you know, like Philomena, your friends would just call you Phil, you know, but, you know, on paperwork, you're just like, who's Philomena, you know? That's what that guy's about. And we just like the idea of a character named Lord Fluffy Britches being like the out of control maniac in the bunch as well. You know,
that's perfect with the three names too. You're running the full gamut. You have like a pretty name, you have like a cute, maybe a young boy named this, and then like a really little kid is definitely naming Lord Fluffy Britches.
That's like in Stray Dogs, there's one that's named Henry and then there's one that's named Other Henry. You know, with the names of these pets.
The memory George stuff the you did there was great, like in all that. I remember reading the second issue, I was just like, wait, what? No, like, what the fuck? No, don't do this.
Oh, man. I hope Lord Fluffy Britches doesn't get it because, you know, there's been a bunch of what's the character's name from Kill Your Darlings, the little elephant guy.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of cute characters in comics lately that I'm like, please don't kill these. I fucking love them. They're adorable as hell. But anyways.
Yeah. Tony will go there. You know that, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, it's a horror book and not a, you know, a fairy tale. You know, I gotta get over that. But you mentioned a few moments ago, talking about, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, sort of these cartoony, you know, animals and dogs, they're more inviting, right? And it's a lot more believable to sort of tell these stories. It seems like, you know, at least since Stray Dogs, I've noticed there's been a lot more animal centric books. We've got, you know, Animal Castle, and now we've got Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, which is super good. That is wildly terrifying. Yeah. But why do you think there's sort of been, like, you know, because Nick and I have commented on this, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, just, you know, really great adult themed sort of horror stories dealing with animals. Do you think that it's a little bit easier to sort of, you know, tell these stories where people can sort of suspend their disbelief for certain things when they're dealing with animals? Or is it just something that's fun as hell to do for you as a creator to find a new way to sort of tell a story?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the second one for me. It's just like I said, it's like a subgenre that I think me and Trish sort of discovered, or like sort of, you know, at least crystallized, you know, like I feel like people were taking cracks at something like this. And I feel like we sort of figured out what the trick of it was, you know, like how to do it and how to, you know, like, you know, you see two different people drive the same car, and me and Trish really knew how to fucking drive this one, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I don't remember seeing anything else like this before you guys. No way. Yeah.
And I don't think any of the other, you know, genre animal things coming after this are necessarily copying us, but I do think that it, when a book comes out and does well, it's easier for other books to get greenlit, you know? So, you know, I know like Pornsack made this book, Man's right. Best, like the Jesse Lonergan and his book at Boom is like a sci-fi Homeward Bound type thing. And there was an idea he had before Stray Dogs. And then, you know, nobody's just making animal comics for, you know, you come up and just say, I got an idea about animals lost in space. It's a tough sell. But if 1 year later you come and you're like, well, these guys sold 1 million comics, you know, then people are like, all right, well, let's see what happens. You know, what's the, there's an audience for that, right?
Yeah. Trailblazing with Stray Dogs. And now it's led to all this other stuff and all these other cute characters getting friggin' tortured. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it.
clearly. So with, I didn't, again, realizing now that technically this is kind of like a zombie story. Is that how you viewed it as you're putting this together?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, we pitched it to Image. I said, we just sent one picture and we said, I think it was like one sentence. It just said like, these cats get lost in the woods during a rabies outbreak. It's like The Walking Dead with cats.
Okay. And you say, of course. So you go from the serial killer story to a zombie story, doing all this horror stuff. Obviously we've got, you're doing Local Man as well over at Image, which we do have questions about. And I know Uncanny Valley is coming up too. And the FOC on that is, on the day that this is dropping, the Uncanny Valley, FOC from Boom. So anyways, I'm curious, from, you know, doing these two different horror titles, do you find that you're running into more challenges or in the process of writing Feral versus Stray Dogs? Are there challenges you didn't expect by staying within the horror genre, but then changing the focus on the story? Because obviously they're very different types of horror stories. Is one easier than the other?
Well, I mean, so the big difference between the two is that Stray Dogs is like a closed story. Like, it's a beginning, middle, and end. It's the five issues plus the two little, you know, miniseries. But Feral's an ongoing story. So it's not necessarily that it's like, we're going to hopefully do it for years.
I didn't realize that.
So it's not that it's difficult. It's just that there's more that we can do and there's more to come up with. But being a student of horror and a fan of zombies and a fan of horror stories, like the ideas are pretty they have not stopped rolling into my head. So we've got a bunch of stuff we want to do, and the numbers came in last week and they were good enough that we know we can go for a while. And so it's just like, you know, okay, we can do this, and then we can do this. You know, we're working on the first arc is 5 issues, and we're working on issue 7 right now. And so we're ready to just take off and run for a while.
Oh, please tell me Lord Fluffy Britches isn't going to be a Coral type character. Coral!
You're going to have an eye patch and stuff.
We
don't have any real hard and fast rules on who can get it and who can't, except for eventually I'll come back at the end of the first arc and we'll talk about it. But there's definitely a few people a few cats that were like, of course not, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, we can, yeah. There's Joe and I have already seen some of the swings you guys are going to be taking. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Vicious. And it's just, I know Joe, you wanted to ask about Trish and Tone, like their art and everything. It's just like, you see, I'm curious for Trish because she's the one. So Tone is doing, he was doing the layouts and Stray Dogs, and now he's doing the background work here.
Yeah.
For Trish, where she's used to drawing these cute characters. Obviously she did Stray Dogs, but yeah. Have there been times in this process for her where like you've had to like be like, no, it's okay. Like you can do this to the animals. It's fine.
Yeah, for sure. When we were doing Stray Dogs, I would always describe her as like a nice lady, you know, like she's a normal person. She doesn't even like horror movies and stuff, you know, like I'm the creep. And so I go like, we're going to do this to him in this issue. And she's like, what, why, you know, like, and she gets it, like she understands story and she understands the drama of it and stuff, but yeah, she's never excited about those panels where she has to do something awful. and sometimes it does take a little, because I'm an artist too, we sort of work pretty closely in collaboration, like we're always throwing stuff back and forth on Dropbox, and so she'll the stuff that you've seen, I think she hit all that stuff 1,000%. We did no notes. But sometimes it'll be like, hey, you could put more, you know, like ripped skin here, or viscera, or, you know, like because sort of the trick to play with these cute characters is like you lull people into a sense of security because they think that they're looking at like, you know, Fievel or Garfield or something. And then all of a sudden you can just smack them. And if you got to hit real hard so that you shake them out of it.
Don't do that to Fievel. Don't love
him.
God,
oh no, not Fievel. Jeez, wow.
Jeez. Stop this man, somebody.
He almost got ate by that cat. Remember, he was inside that cat's mouth.
But you know, he got out and then eventually he went west and you know,
friends with that cat.
Ooh, are we gonna get a great mouse detective version of this? I'm all about that. Let's see Basil and Ratigan. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. A detective story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah, get writing credits on this, perhaps. But no,
I'm supposed to say whenever we have ideas like that on podcasts, I'm supposed to say, "Oh, I had an idea that's sort of like that."
Right.
That way, when you bring this to court,
right,
you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither am I.
Not for me, I don't know about Joe.
Nick and I don't have lawyer money. We're good. But so you touched upon just a second ago, right, with Trish. And so I'm always fascinated, especially when we have writers on who are also who are artists. And I love, you know, hearing about different, you know, writers and creators, you know, approach with working with the artists. And so you've been working with Trish for a while now. So what is, you know, like your working relationship between you two? Do you, you know, give her a lot of notes a lot of time, or because you two have been working together for so long, you just say, you know, here's the script, do your thing, and then, you know, take it from there.
No, our process is pretty, it's still about the same as it was on Stray Dogs, because I feel like we sort of landed on a thing that works pretty well for our process and the outcome. You know, like Stray Dogs looks pretty much exactly like I want it to look, you know, like, so we refined it a little bit. Like you said, Tone is doing full backgrounds now, because that was almost what he was doing on Stray Dogs. Like when we made that book, Tone's one of my best friends, and we worked together in a studio for years. And he's an artist in his own right. You know, like he draws his own books. He did this book, Final Messiahs. He drew Simpsons comics and Snake Plissken and all kinds of stuff. But he would also help me out doing like layouts if I was behind on a deadline. So like when I was working on My Little Pony comics, sometimes he would do like backgrounds or layouts for that. And then I would just ink over it and, you know, it would save me time. And so when we started making these books, I was like, on this one and on another book I did, Time Shopper, I was working with artists who were newer, like hadn't done a bunch of sequentials. And I knew I wanted somebody who could do storytelling, and I knew Tone could. And so I hired him to do thumbnails or layouts basically. And so on Time Shopper, which is not a book anyone even asked about, but he did the full layouts, and just basically drew like a quickly drawn version of that comic. And then Christian Meese, who drew that book, just drew over his, like did his pencils and inks over those layouts. And then when we got to Stray Dogs, we were going to roll into it doing the same thing. But I sort of figured out through doing that first book that like the style of storytelling I wanted to do in this book was a little more, not even necessarily modern comics, but more like the way like turn of the century, like 2000s comics would be more cinematic than panel to panel. You know, Stray Dog is a lot of horizontals. It's a lot of like, you know, beat, 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 beat. Then more than like when you look at comic pages that are real panel-y, it's like, right. And Stray Dogs is like, gun, like building rhythm. And the comics that Tone was influenced by are more Bronze Age comics. And the stuff that I'm influenced by are more, you know, turn of the century modern comics. So on this book, this is the longest answer to a simple question.
That's okay. I love it.
On this book, well, on Stray Dogs and on Feral, what we do is I do thumbnails that are just like really rough because Tone and I have a pretty decent shorthand. Who would call me? I thought I was on Do Not Disturb.
It's probably Trish complaining about having to mutilate another animal.
Tone and I have a decent shorthand, so I can do pretty rough thumbnails. And then he understands what those are, and he builds those up into detailed layouts in Stray Dogs, and then in Feral, full backgrounds. And then we send Trish those, like a file that has the background or the layout and the thumbnails and everything, and she can sort of see all the pieces. And then on Stray Dogs, she would draw the dogs and then ink the full backgrounds just by looking at what it said on the, you know, like she also got a script. But if she didn't have a script, like there were certain issues of Stray Dogs and of Feral where like the script wasn't done before the art started. So she'll just be drawing based on the thumbnails and the backgrounds. And, the, you know, it's just like, here's a cat and the cat is scared. And, you know, we talk all the time on the phone or text message or whatever. So it's a real very, very collaborative process. And even though like Tone's in Louisiana and Trish is in Baltimore and I'm in L.A., we're always on like Dropbox or text message or email or call, you know, like we're just constantly in touch. And these pages are always sort of getting refined and, you know, nothing because I'm sort of a lunatic control freak, like nothing's ever finished until it goes to print. So I'm like George Lucas, you know, I'm just like, we could change this or we could move this or whatever. So I'm sure that's frustrating for them, but I feel like at the end of the day, it all sort of comes out in the wash. Like the stuff always looks great when they're all done with it. So I'm sort of like a writer slash, I don't know, project manager or whatever. Like I go,
makes sense. You
know, move this here, put this there, that type of stuff.
So with that said, right, you obviously have a very specific, you know, image in mind or, you know, scene you want to have portrayed. Has there ever been a time where Trish or Tone have come back with something and you go, oh shit, that's either like, I didn't think of it, I didn't see it like that, and it's better than my idea, right? If they ever kind of come back with stuff like that, that sort of
fucking never has that. No, of course. Yeah. That's the great part about collaborating is, you know, you have, you know, and on this book, there's Trish and Tone and Brad, and everybody sort of has, you know, we're all working in one direction, but everybody has their own experiences they bring and styles and ideas. And so, yeah, you know, sometimes I'll leave stuff wide open where I'm just like, these cats can be doing anything here. And then Trish will draw literally something I wasn't expecting, and it'll be, you know, it'll be perfect. So yeah, now, that happens all the time.
There's a specific development that happens in issue two. And again, respecting spoilers, with one of our main characters, that kind of like it blew me away. And it's such a small thing in the grand scheme of the whole plot and everything. But I was honestly, I saw it and I was like, wait a minute, what? Like, and you address it in the story. But I still had to Google it myself. And then I found out that was a thing. I'm still like mystified by it. Did you, and I'm assuming you know what I'm talking about as I'm asking this question. I hope you do. But I'm curious if you, like, did you know that already? Did Trish tell you or Tone, or did you like look that up? Like, how did you, that like was an important detail in all this. It felt like very much it was.
That thing you're talking about is actually me and Tone were talking about the story. He, a lot of times now, like, he lives in Louisiana, but he'll come out here and stay at my place for a week or two, and we'll just sit here and work on the book together, like olden timey, you know, Eastman and Laird or whatever. But we were talking about the story, and we were talking about this one part, and he was like, you know, some cats, don't, you can just talk about this, fine. Like, some cats don't have claws. Some cats get declawed. And I was like, oh, they sure do. You know, like, yep. I've had cats that have been declawed, or I've had friends who have had cats that have been declawed. And it's sort of, you know, like, no judgment, but it's like, for the cat, that's got to be awful, you know?
Just right.
Like, you know, one day you have this, you have basically fingernails or fingers, and then the next day you don't, you can't grab stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was just like, that's cool. And that's exactly the kind of stuff when you change the perspective of a horror story to be from somebody else's perspective, from like, you know, in our case, making the story told from the perspective of cats, like, you don't get that from people. Like, there's not just a person. You would notice if a person didn't have fingers, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. You could do it a story about a person that didn't have fingers, but you wouldn't be able to surprise the reader by saying like, well, you don't even have fingers, you know?
Yeah, because as I was reading it, I didn't even, like, even in the moment of where this became relevant, I guess we'll leave it at that. Like, you guys all know when you read the second issue, get the first one and then read the second, and you'll know what we're talking about. But when that becomes relevant, even as I'm reading it, I'd be willing to bet people listen to this now, as they read it, they won't know until it's specifically talked about in the issue, because just the heat of what's going on and everything. Yeah. And I was just, like, that kind of detail is what, like, to me, it's like, those are the things that make, they separate like great books from like from good books, because it's just such an amazing, perfectly makes sense. But just, I mean, like, yeah, you have indoor cats. Of course, you're going to have some that are declawed.
Yeah. We're trying to think about stuff like that all the time, because that is what, you know, I could just tell the story like a zombie story where these are just, they're not cats, they're people. But we're always looking for ways that them being cats, influences the story. It takes it in different directions, and that's definitely one of those.
I can tell you, I have a chair in my house that is absolutely destroyed because attempting to trim my cat's claws is like trying to give, what I imagine, Wolverine a prostate exam. It is not fun. I've got scars to prove it. But the other day,
I don't know how you think we can just move on from Wolverine's prostate. That's not what we're all just sitting here thinking about.
Right?
Just take a moment.
Where the fuck did that come from, Joe?
Let that sink in. Well,
so vivid.
Right? Have you been furiously attacked by a cat with claws? It fucking hurts.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? I bring imagery. You know, that's
where. There you go.
Right? Yeah. I get the people to think. But going from one intellectual property to another, we had this great little exchange on Twitter the other day where we made a video and Nick posted, and we were talking, because we were talking about Nick had just read Stray Dogs for the first time in anticipation for this chat, so because we read Feral, and we talked about how awesome it might be, because you've worked on My Little Pony along with Trish, if we had like a horror My Little Pony book. And I was, my daughter reads My Little Pony. She's got a big stack of their comics upstairs. And I had gotten one of the names wrong. Applejack, I called Applebottom.
Yeah.
and so Trish ran with it. And then you dropped a boots with the fur, Jim, which was friggin' hysterical. So I want to know, when are we going to get like, you know, Applejack's sociopathic twin, Applebottom, you know, into a comic?
Now, I was funny, this keeps coming up, but I was just talking to somebody else earlier today, and Trish and I have talked about it. Like, so Stray Dogs is a finished thing, you know, that we may do like one more small Stray Dogs thing before, you know, we we go away or whatever, but it's for all intents and purposes, it's a finished story. Straight Dog or Feral's an ongoing story, but after Feral, you know, whenever that wraps up, we've talked about like what would be our last, you know, like do a trilogy of these things and have it be like a horse or a pony thing and have it be like a sort of like, you know, we did a serial killer one and we did a zombie one. We would do like a ghost horses, you know, like some sort of spooky ghost horses thing.
Ooh.
I feel like that would be a cool full circle to take it from My Little Pony, then back around, you know, land at the ponies again.
My Little Brony, a detective story.
That's right. Figure out what's going on with these guys.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Ever since Joe mentioned that, I was like, I need that. Like, that would be amazing if you guys are able to do that. That's awesome that you're already talking about it.
Yeah.
So we have Feral that's out on the 28th. Make sure you guys go check that out. We're not going to talk about Uncanny Valley just yet, but I do want to mention again, the FOC for that is the 18th of March. So it's the day that this is dropped. Make sure you call your local comic shop, go to your local comic shop, let them know you want the first issue of Uncanny Valley. We will get to that in a second. But first, we got to talk about Local Man. And this is a book that, again, that you're working on, you're writing, and Joe called dibs on and stole it from me. And there are times where he calls dibs on a book and I'm like, God damn it. Like I should have moved faster on that. And there are sometimes some special occasions where I get like serious FOMO from not reading a book, and Local Man was one of those. And as soon as Joe talked about it on the show at the end of the first arc, I went and read that shit right away. And I was right to feel like I was missing out, because I mean, not only is it a great story, but the industry has had such a strong response to it. So that's two titles right there where it's like, you know, you're making some serious, serious waves. And that's not to diminish the other work that you've been doing, Tony, but very impressive. For, you know, I know it's been a while since Local Man first began and it got all this other stuff going on with it, but where did the idea for that story first come from?
That was, Tim sort of had an idea that was shaped something like this. But we were buddies and we had a shared love of 90s Image Comics. And both of us are like super collaborative. It turns out we didn't know this going into it, but Tim, I should have known, because Tim's worked, you know, had a lot of like very close collaborations, you know, like him and Mike Norton when they did Revival and they did other books together, or like him and Tom King when they did Grayson together and they did other books together. So, he's always just like collaborating very closely with people and sort of like, he's just a very generous collaborator is what I would learn. But where it came from is we were at a convention sitting next to each other, or maybe like back to back, we're close to each other. And I was sitting next to Norm Ratman, who's an inker at DC now, but he started out at Extreme Studios, early Image Comics. His first book was Brigade Number One, which is like the third Image comic or something. It was the first Image comic that wasn't by one of the Image Seven. And he had brought a page from, because first we were just sort of like peppering him with like Extreme Studios questions on the first day. You know, it's like, what was it like? You know, what was young Rob Liefeld like? Or, you know, what happened around? Do you remember when this happened or that? You know, like just like little fanboy questions, because for Tim and I, that stuff was, Tim's like a couple years older than me, but for me, I was like 14 years old. It's the perfect comic books for the perfect age. You know, like I'm 14. I'm just like a little, you know, like if you show me like giant muscles and guns and like beautiful, scantily clad girls and stuff, I'm just like, whatever this is, I just want to see all of this, you know? So I fell deep into Image Comics. And so we were just like peppering this guy with questions about it. And then the second day of the show, he brought a page from Brigade Number One. It was drawn by Murat Michaels, but Rob Liefeld had gone in and drawn all the faces. And you could pick up the paper and like peel it back and see what the original face looked like underneath it. It was like seeing like a, you know, like a National Treasure or something, like finding a secret on the Declaration of Independence or something, you know, like, it's this thing that I thought I knew about my whole life. And then I see some secret history to it. But so we were just really fascinated by that stuff. We were really talking about it a bunch that weekend. And then after that, when Tim got home, he emailed me and he was like, we should do something that's like a 90s Image comic meets a 90s Vertigo comic. And we started kicking ideas back and forth about like what that would be, what that means, you know. And we sort of eventually shuffled off the part of it that was Vertigo. And it sort of more became like we should do a book that's like a 90s Image comic and also like a modern like detective story, but also have it be Midwestern. Like it's not an easy pitch, but we figured out like a vibe that we wanted to do. And my job on the book a lot of the time is Tim will like, we'll come up with a story together. And then Tim is like, can figure out plots and figure out where, like what all fits in an issue and stuff. And then my job is to go back through and make it fit the vibe. Right. You know, like I just go through and I go like, he wouldn't say all this. He would just say this one thing. Or like the beginning of the book, when Jack is sitting at the bus stop and the Uber driver comes and tells him that the buses don't come there anymore and he has to walk in, like all of that is, that's just pure vibe stuff. And Tim has said, like in interviews before when we've been on these things, he's just like, that's something I would never think to do because it's like 5-6 pages of literally nothing, but it gives you a feeling about the emptiness of this place. And that was sort of like the feeling that I wanted to go into that book with. So like, that's the sort of stuff that when we collaborate, like Tim will send the script in and then I'll sort of like mess with it and sort of like try and put stuff into it that would be interesting for me to read. And I don't know, it's very, very collaborative. The same way that Stray Dogs and Feral were collaborative, this book is collaborative, but in a different way, but to the same extent. Like we're both just sort of like have our hands on the thing the whole time and working on it constantly.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I need to know the answer to this because this might be literally the hardest I have ever laughed in a comic ever. And I laughed out loud. I told Nick about it right away. You know, I said, did you read this yet? I think it was a moment. It was in the second arc. I can't remember exactly what issue. But yeah, Jack is tripping balls. He knows. He knows where I'm going. And he gets a text message from Ingus. And it's a picture of what he thinks is something very sexually explicit. And it turns out it's just a donut.
Yeah.
But he's tripping balls and he reciprocates.
Yeah.
Whose idea was this? And if it was yours, Tony, fucking vo.
What's great about this is that's exactly one of those vibe check things where I was like, I think it should be this. But I knew I could do that. I could make that change. I'll tell you the whole story, but because Tim does all these like, you know, pervy, you know, hack slashes sort of pervy and like, money shots sort of pervy. He does like a lot of titty comics and stuff. And so I was like, I can do this here and people are just going to think it's Tim and I can just live my life, you know, do my little cat comics and stuff. And people will just assume this is a bad influence. But yeah, Tim wrote it where he wanted for them to have one last like sweet romantic interaction. He's a very sincere guy, Tim. And I'm always like, they should be more hateful or they should be like people should be meaner to each other. So he wanted them to have one last sweet interaction. And we ended up moving that into later in the arc. But it was supposed to be just her like flirting with him and sending him like an actual, like a lingerie picture or just like actually what he saw, what he thought he saw. And then I was like, but we also have him being dosed and so I was like, well, he should start hallucinating right away. And so I wrote a butthole. and then I sent it back to Tim. And Tim was like, should we do butthole? You think that's a bit far? And I was like, no, I don't think it's too far. And then we sort of argued back and forth about maybe it's a nipple or maybe it's just a boob or maybe it's two boobs or whatever. You know, like we went through the whole
whole anatomy
every possible combination of things it could be, and but it was always going to be a like a dick pic in response.
Sure.
With full Brett Favre.
But I pushed for so stupid because I don't like people to be able to read something and go like, they didn't go for it, you know. So yeah, I like the idea that you read that book and you're just like, these fuckers will do anything, you know? And so we did it, and then literally it's caused us problems from the moment we did it. The printer who usually prints the book wouldn't print it, so they had to send it to Canada.
Oh my goodness.
So like if you have six and seven and six feel different, like the paper stock is different. And then it looked like for a minute we got charged like an extra $2,000 for the shipping back and forth to Canada. Luckily that was just a clerical error, but that was because of that. And then on the trades, once again, the printer was like, yeah, we're not printing it in trade either. So we had to print the trades in Canada. And then so now the second volume trade has a glossy cover where the first volume trade has like a matte cover, because they have no idea what the other printer did. It's just like a huge calamity all from this one stupid panel. So I'm glad you enjoyed it, because it causes no end of headaches. Would I have done it differently if I'd known what a pain in the ass it was going to be?
Figuratively, right?
But there's no question that you guys don't hold back at all. I mean, clearly, but that's that little detail does make that difference. But yeah.
I love that they wouldn't print it.
In
the United States of America.
Yeah, what are we talking about here? Come on. I mean, there's some.
Then I wanted to know, like, what they would print. Like, what is it, just below the belt that they won't print? Or will they print boobs? Would they have been okay if the dick pic was in there? You know?
Right. Yeah, this is very interesting.
Well, what was it? The Infernals? I mean, there was a hammer drawn in that book.
Oh, yeah.
And that made it through the printers. You know?
Yeah, but where did they print that? You want to know. You can look at the niche on the front page. If it says printed in Canada, I guess you just assume that there may be a dick in this.
Or if it's the same printer that did Feral, like, okay, so you're not okay with, you know, butthole pics, but you're fine with animal cruelty? I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of suspect. I don't know. we don't want to get you in any more trouble. but like, you know, and all jokes aside, part of like even the little bits like that, like the torture that you put Crossjack through, all of it, it's just like, the response by the industry has been very powerful. I mean, you know that. I mean, the praise that you guys are getting is insane and very much warranted. I'm curious manner in which you've captured everybody's attention. Again, not just readers, but it feels like really heavily the industry. Does that add any pressure to what you guys do as you continue to move forward with this story?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what people like about it is the thing that we were doing. So we're just going to keep doing what we had planned to do. And presumably they'll continue to like it the same way. And if they don't, you know, whatever. But I think the thing that people are responding to, the industry people that we've seen respond to it, I've talked to people and everybody like has their, because everybody read those books or saw those books and there's all these characters out there, especially people that write, you know, like superhero comics. There's all these characters out there that have sort of like that 90s, that had that time in the 90s. And you think like, what do you do about that? You know, like, do you just pretend like that didn't happen? Or, you never see like the Fantastic Four wearing those vests or the boob windows or any of that stuff, you know, like, and I talked to a few people who read Local Man and they were like, oh, fuck, that's how you do it. You know, like, that's the way that you can get into talking about that stuff or celebrating that stuff, is you use it as how you show the difference between the past and the present, you know? And it's not something we really invented, you know, like that's what Alan Moore's Supreme was. They, you know, there's all these books where they'll show you a modern day superhero and then it'll look like the 1960s or whatever. And that's the flashback. But the only difference is, you know, it's 30 years past that now. So for me, when I think of a flashback to, you know, 30 years ago, it's the 90s. You know?
Yeah. You know, let's stop talking about the past and let's look towards the future, specifically March 18th, which is the FOC date for.
I love how many times you've said this.
Yeah, got to hammer it home with everybody. The first issue is going to be coming out in April, but again, the FOC 318. This is a boom book. So you guys all know the number one rule on TLDR, Doc Rule. If it's a boom number one, you got to pick it up. You got to check it out. And if you know Tony Fleece is writing it, then you absolutely got to check it out. You don't even need the boom rule for that. So this quick synopsis for those who don't know, Oliver is a seemingly typical 12-year-old boy except for a mysterious family history that seems to start and end with his mother. Oh, and his unexplainable powers, that is. He can do things other boys can't, to the point of landing himself in some trouble. Baffled by the surreal, cartoonish nature of his abilities, and followed by a murder of peculiar crows, Oliver begins to pull the threads on this secret, the secrets his family has kept from him for so long. I should have made you read that, Joe. But yeah.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. But either way, I'm very much in on this. And I saw the art right away with this, too, in some of the preview pages that first got released. So am I correct that like we're so it's Dave Watchers he's the artist on this series with you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, is it multiple art styles or is it just am I seeing that correctly as well in this?
What do you think Joe's doing right now?
Joe's he's got a technical
thing. Okay.
No, he's yeah, you're muted, Joe. You're muted.
My daughter has to take a shower to the bathroom. Oh, okay.
Well, I'm glad we didn't see that.
What's he doing back there? I don't even know.
Jesus Christ.
I was flipping through issues 6 and 7 of Local Man.
You're like, I forgot about that. Let me.
He's taking care of his very many dogs that he somehow came into possession of.
He keeps every couple of weeks he has a new one.
I never ask questions.
Yeah, Dave Wachter's drawing it. And it is in many different styles, and he's doing all of them, and he's doing the full art and colors and everything, and so he's able to use the colors to differentiate between stuff that's real world, stuff that's cartoons, stuff that's, you know, there's the cartoons who look like, you know, modern cartoons are going to look different from like black and white cartoons are going to look different from, you know, anime cartoons. So awesome. Yeah, it's a. That's the solicit text. The short pitch for it is basically it's just a coming of age story about a boy who feels like he doesn't fit in, and he finds out through the course of the story that the reason why he feels like he doesn't fit in is because his grandfather is a cartoon character, and he's part cartoon, and he has to go on this journey with his grandpa to sort of like learn about where he's from and who he is and find the place that he fits into. And then decide if that's for him or if he's supposed to be, you know, with his family, or if he's supposed to be, you know, it's one of these, you know, adventure stories. Dave, who draws it, said it's sort of like Percy Jackson, but with Looney Tunes instead of Greek gods.
Oh,
I could love that.
Yeah, I mean, a real life kid finds out that his grandfather's a cartoon character. Boom, I'm in. We should just start and end this whole thing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So knowing that, having a little bit better understanding now, so totally makes sense why you have the different art styles. Of course, very excited to experience that. It's not something we see very often, but I'm curious from a writing standpoint, as much as you are an artist as well, was that a different experience for you when, as you were kind of going through plotting out the story and everything? Is that a challenge that you maybe didn't expect?
For sure it is. I'm always thinking about when I'm writing it, because I'm writing this character who's, I mean, the kid I have no problem writing. Like if you ask me to write a boy who feels like he doesn't fit in, that doesn't, you know, like anybody can write that because everybody's felt like that at some point, unless you're a dickhead, and, you know, like, just like the coolest guy in the world. And, you know,
look at you, Friar.
Yeah, I can tell you fit in. Look at you.
I pitched at Northwestern. Ooh.
All right, I'm just gonna go now.
You can still read it. It'll be
play with all my dogs that I just came into possession of.
You could about imagine what it's like to not fit in. You know? But yeah, that's easy to write. But when I'm writing the other characters, the cartoon characters, the grandfather character, I find myself writing him like a grandfather, and I have to remind myself all the time that like he's also a cartoon, you know. So it's a difficult line to thread. That's a mixed metaphor. It's a difficult line to walk doing it where you get all the emotional stuff you want to get out of this character, but you also are reminded that like he's also a rootin' tootin' cartoon cowboy at the same time, you know. So it is difficult to write for sure. But I think the great part about it is that Dave, we worked together a couple times before on like tiny stuff that you'll never see. but we have a real good understanding. Like, he understands what my scripts are saying better than anyone, I think. Like, he sees it, he draws it, it's exactly right, you know, and so he really gets like what the vibe is, what the characters are, and he knows, like, he's drawing these cartoon characters with all the same emotion that you draw real characters with, and vice versa. Like, when the real characters get cartoony, he's good at doing that too. So it makes it easier to write, just knowing that, like, he'll get it, and he'll, I don't have to explain too hard in the description, like, what's being said here, because he's going to draw it, you know, exactly right when he gets to it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's particularly about how Dave kind of has a better understanding when it, like, not to compare with everybody else, but just how well he understands your writing and what you're going for. That's fascinating. And you said, so you guys have worked multiple times together, and I think in the announcement of the series from Boom that there was a quote from you there saying that you've had this idea for some time now. I'm curious, why was now the time to unleash the Uncanny Valley?
Well, it's something that it needed to be at some place where they were going to either pay for one person to do it or pay for a couple people to do it. Like, that's the deal with Boom, is that they pay in advance. They pay me to write it. They pay Dave to draw it. And then we like share ownership, and then, you know, whatever. It's all business stuff. Sure. But basically, on all the Image books, like on Uncanny or on Local Man and on Feral and Stray Dogs, we just make those comics, and then Image puts them out, and then we get paid when Image gets paid for the books. So it's a long time to be to sort of invest in yourself. So, like, while we're making Stray Dogs, I was working on a ton of other things, and Trish was working her day job, and something like Uncanny Valley, where it's so complicated. And it's like, you need somebody that can draw realistic, very realistic, and somebody that can also draw cartoony. And like, it either has to be one person that can do all that or two people. I just always knew that it was going to have to be at some place where we had some sort of support, because like, anybody that can do that is going to be busy working somewhere. And Dave was, like, he was busy working at Marvel. He was doing Punisher up until the day we started working on Uncanny Valley. Mm-hmm. And so when Boom came along and asked me if I, you know, was interested in making something, I showed him like what my creator own stuff was. And I leaned specifically on the types of stuff that was like, I can't just make this myself, or I can't just do it with Tone and Trish, or, you know, like,
smart.
So this was one definitely where we needed a little bit of support to get it made. And so, yeah, they paid Dave to make it, and he could afford to, you know, still pay his mortgage while he's sitting here working on this thing. And it's less of a risk up front for us, because, you know, if Feral comes out and it's a disaster, you know, then we've made nothing. Mm-hmm. But if Uncanny Valley comes out and it's a disaster, then we made the money we got paid to make it, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's basically why, why I waited until now. It was 10 years, and the 10 years was, you know, I had the basic idea of it, but all the sort of like heart of it came over the course of that time, where I would have like plot ideas and sort of like big structural ideas and stuff. But I've had just a notebook going for that whole time, or a series of notebooks, where I would just be like, oh, this should be this, or, you know, the mom should feel this way about her father. Or, you know, so I've had a long time to sort of like develop this world, these people. And so now, you know, after we get off the phone, I'm going back, I'm working on a script, and it's like, I'm just writing stuff down that I've known was going to happen for, you know, for years, which is interesting and different than, say, something like, you know, Local Man, that we, like, me and Tim will come up with a story arc, and then, you know, a month later we'll be putting it together, you know? So mm-hmm. It's definitely, all of them are pretty different.
Well, here's hoping there's a Jessica Rabbit character.
in this story. Like, you don't want to hold back. You don't want to hold back any punches, right?
Yeah. That's right. I don't know if Boom will let us do B-holes. We haven't discussed that with them.
Well,
just pixelate it. That's all. You know,
no, it's a cartoon. It'll be cute. It's just shaped like a little X, you know?
Yeah. Goodness. So, my... My last question that we have for you, Tony, is so you know, you mentioned before how when you started doing Stray Dogs, or maybe it was after Stray Dogs, where you'd had some people who would like, you were hearing like doing cartoony type stuff, like it's not necessarily going to work, it's going to be more challenging. However it was put to you, I know it was along those lines. I'm curious, like, so we have Stray Dogs, we have Feral, Uncanny Valley is going to dip into that as well. Is that something that we know you can go outside of that clearly, but is that something that is going to always be a part of what you want to do? Or is it like a concerted effort, like in the short term, to do as much of that as you possibly can? Or is it just whatever the mood strikes you right now?
No, I think that's just part of my, however many years from now, when you can look back at everything, you can take a look at my career as a survey or whatever. I think there will be a lot of stuff that has sort of like cartoony animated influences, but I'm always trying to do a different take on it, but it's because I draw cartoony, and it's almost like I would always tell people when I was working on My Little Pony, or when I was, the reason I got the job on My Little Pony is I did samples for Ninja Turtles. It was also published by IDW. And the editor said, Nickelodeon says these are too cartoony, but do you want to draw this other book? And I was like, yeah, all right, I'll draw whatever, I just want to work. Yeah. But too cartoony is something that anybody that draws like me, heard a million times. Scotty Young heard it a million times. All these guys that draw cartoony, it always was like a pejorative. It's like a negative. And I'm very stubborn, and I'm real fuck you about shit like that. And so I want, it's important to me to show people that, no, it's not too cartoony. Look at this. This is how you do it. Trust me. This is how you. And so I feel like I'll continue to do stuff like that. Unless, like I said, if Feral and Uncanny Valley are two big disasters, then I can be like, all right, well, I guess everyone's right.
And Stray Dogs was a hit, and we can't wait for everybody to get a look at Feral. And we can't wait to get a look at Uncanny Valley ourselves.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't send it to you. I should have sent you a PDF.
No, you send us extra.
There's still time. There's still time.
This is true. Tony, that's all we got for you. We really appreciate you taking the time. Again, reminder for everybody, 3/18, March 18th, that is the FOC for Uncanny Valley. The day that you're listening to this, the day that this is dropping, make sure you call your local comic shop. But yeah, like you said, maybe we can check in after the first arc of Feral comes to a conclusion, because Joe and I didn't know it was going to be an ongoing. So very exciting news to hear. Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been great. I always watch you guys' reviews. I love when you talk about our stuff. So it's been very nice to talk to you in person.
Oh, thank you very much.
Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.